This program is a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and is brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guests, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks. 97 Gold presents Your Money with Fay Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Now, here's Fay Bagby on 97 Gold.
Good morning.
Well, good morning, Faye. How are you?
I'm wonderful. You know, these cold mornings sure get your blood up, don't they?
Oh, it's like nature's rude awakening, literally.
It really is. I mean, we haven't had a lot of real cold weather, and now we're having really cold weather.
Yeah. And sometimes we'll like to sleep with the window cracked just a little bit, just to kind of get some fresh air. When you wake up, it's like 30 degrees. It's like, ooh, that's a little bit of a surprise. You get to a little bit of.
I don't think I need that kind of cool weather.
No. Then you get nasal things, and you sound like you got sinus issues, and so it's terrible. It's a surprise. But the good news is, if this is good news, in no time at all, it'll be like 1,000 degrees for like 10 months straight.
Well, I love that you're already thinking that way, because I'm just thinking of today and tomorrow that it's cold, that I don't want to get up and I don't want to go outside.
Yeah.
You know, I'd rather just pass on all that.
A good day to just kind of, maybe it's napping weekend. That would be good.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well,
and you know how I love Saturdays, but I don't love cold Saturdays.
No.
I like it when it's just a little warmer.
Yeah. That nice little in-between part where, you know, especially like I know we talk in the fall, you know, when it's a little bit crisp in the morning, but then it gets to be nice and comfortably warm in the afternoon. Those are like the ideal perfect days.
Yes, I'm looking for some of those.
Yeah, they're coming.
I'd like to see a perfect day.
Boy, wouldn't we all?
Yeah, everybody's looking for that. Utopia, you know? And I haven't heard a lot about utopia lately, but I'm sure looking.
Well, if you find a perfect day, let us know.
I'll let you know that it was perfect all day and the sun set and everything was wonderful.
Oh, boy. This is Your Money with Fay Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
If people have not been to the website and they're thinking about new investments and things like that, they probably should go there, because you've got a ton of information on the website. You can see what people have made in the past. You also have testimonials up there, so people can read about other people's experience, which is really a big thing, especially you hear a lot about how a lot of new investors will come in and they'll say, you know, Faye, I was talking to my cousin or my brother or my coworker, or my friend or whatever, and they said they've been with you for a long time and they made a ton of money. And so, you know, now I kind of want to get on board, too. You get a lot of people that do that, right?
That's exactly right. A lot of people recommend us every week, every month. They always have. And so we have, you know, people that start out them and then their brother. I've got one family, there's three brothers. I've got one family, it's two brothers and their mother. So we have a lot of families that are involved with us. Then I have a new investor that his wife was with us years ago, and she passed away. And it took him 3 or 4 years before he came and started investing with us.
Really?
So, you know, it's word of mouth lots and lots of times. People will tell somebody else about them. They'll tell them how well they did. And so then they do come to us. So, and then with all the new people lately, we've had lots and lots of new people that want to get their money to safety. And they figure right now, having money in an insurance policy is a lot safer than a lot of other places it could be. And I agree with them. I think a life insurance policy right now is a very safe place to put your money.
What's the big draw? What's the big difference between it? What makes it such a great opportunity right now?
Well, I think it's because you always know you'll get your principal and your interest. You know that that life insurance company will always pay off. You'll always get your money because, you know, these are huge life insurance companies that we buy the policies on, and they always pay. So it's not like some little company out here in Podunk. These companies are worth $40 to $50 billion, and they pay their claims. And we know they'll pay. You know, they have reserves up on every policy, so we know we can trust them to pay their claims. So, and people lately are worried. I know I get calls every day, Faye, is there a safer way to do this? Do you think my money is safe in the bank? So everybody's a little skittish right now, and I think they should be. I think everything's uncertain right now. We just don't know how things are going to go.
What do you think when they call and they say, you know, hey, we're a little bit nervous. What are you hearing on the street from an expert's point of view? What's the chatter that is going on that maybe the rest of us on the outside may not know?
Well, I think everybody's worried that there's going to be so many changes that's going to really affect our lives and the ability to make money. You know, if they regulate us to death, it's really going to affect everything. When people make the remark that instead of being in the oil and gas business, you can make solar panels, you know, that sends everybody out of it.
Sure.
Because, you know, Texas is an oil and gas state. Always has been, always will be. So we don't want them to take that ability to drill oil and gas away from us or any of our other abilities, you know, for other types of businesses that flourish in our state. You know, really, we're about deregulation. We're not about regulation.
Yeah.
And all these new regulations could hurt a lot of people.
Do you think there is a long-term issue? Because I know sometimes, you know, in the past we've talked about how some people have talked about some, quote, event that may or may not be happening. But long-term, do you think things will kind of turn? Because weren't we getting around like $80 a barrel? I think. did I imagine that? We're getting around 80.
Well, it's 50-something now. But I've talked to some oil and gas people in the last 2 weeks. And they said they think it's going to go back to $80.
Right.
And so they feel like they are investing again. They're putting their money back out here. And all the oil companies that file bankruptcy, that's all over. You know, the big ones out of Dallas, some of the big pipelines, you know, filed bankruptcy. So all that's over now. So it looks like, you know, they think that it's going to go back to $80. Business is picking up out here. So I think that part's good. It's just people in general are worried about new regulations. They're worried about how things could happen. They're worried about the stock market. You know, when a group of investors can almost take out the mutual fund companies, that's scary.
Yeah, that's a
these
shock.
Small investors got together. They were buying GameStop. Well, they changed the trajectory of that investment completely. And they really hurt the mutual fund companies. The mutual fund companies were in shock that little investors could take them on and make them suffer a tremendous loss. They didn't know that little people could do that.
Does that change the dynamic for other sectors as well? That they say, well, if it happened here, it could happen, you know, anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, small investors, if they got together, I had never thought of it before, but they could do something. They could change things for a big mutual fund, which is what they did. They took on mutual fund companies this week like it's never happened before. Nobody, and then immediately everybody said, how can we do something to them? It's free enterprise. You can't do something to those little investors. Mm-hmm. You can't stop them.
You know, it kind of seems like, you know, the last year or so we've seen a lot of firsts And when you have a lot of firsts, it causes a lot of uncertainty because we realize that things can happen that maybe we hadn't thought about happening or didn't realize could happen, which makes, you know, people a little bit nervous, which might be a culmination of how we got to where we are now with so much uncertainty. And so people are looking for other alternatives. You think that's kind of, it's been building up, you know, over time to get here? Or do you think this is all of a sudden like a flip of a switch?
I think it's all of a sudden. I don't think it's taken a long time to get here. I think things are just changing as we go daily. And that's why a lot of people are coming to us. We've had more people come to us in the last 30 days, you know, wanting to put their money in. And these are substantial investments. These are not small investments of $100,000. These are large ones. People wanting to make that change. And also, they don't want that much cash in their bank right now. A lot of people said, you know, I've got too much money in cash at the bank. You know, I want to put it in policies and not leave it in the bank. So we've had a lot of that this last 2 weeks.
So people are realizing that if they're not growing their money, they're not growing their money. They realize that, you know, just sitting there is kind of, it's a risk. It's not just like you have it under the mattress, which is not a good idea. But if it's sitting in the bank, they're just not making money. And they could, is it reasonable to think that they may lose things that are just kind of like sitting stagnant? Could that go down?
I think so. I think if it's just sitting there, they are a little worried. They don't want that much left in that particular bank. So, you know, they're sending it over to us. And I think it's they're getting it diversified out. They're not leaving all their money in one bank. They're putting a lot of it with us. And I think that's probably a really good idea right now.
You see it as a mass exodus, or is it just kind of like a little bit of a shift in priorities?
I think a lot of them are shifting. They're going to shift their priorities. They're making some calls on how they think they should be doing business. And I think getting to something that you know is better than uncertainty.
Let's talk about the investment for a second. Let's explain what is a life settlement, first of all, because I know a lot of other people are probably driving around. It's Saturday morning. We get out. We start doing things, driving around thinking, you know, well, gosh, this is probably one of these things that I need to actually deal with because I put things off long enough. We're not making money in the stock market. Or if we have, you know, you have the risk of going back down. And there's so many things going on that are causing people to look for other alternatives. And this might be something that would be great for a lot of people. I know you've had a lot of new investors come over for just those very reasons. So what is a life settlement and what makes it such a great, a better opportunity for people who are nervous?
Okay, a life settlement is where our clients are buying into a policy of somebody that has cancer. So these are people that have got stage 3 in some cases. Most of it's all stage 4. They have stage 4 cancer. They have a short time to live, like 18 months up to 30 months. And so they know that this policy is going to make them some money. They know they're going to make, it's 1% a month. They're going to make like 18% if it's 18 months, 24% if it's 24 months, and so on. So they buy into a life policy. They know they're going to get paid. They know it's a life insurance policy. And when they buy into that, they're in there with a lot of other people. If it's a $1 million policy, there may be 8 other people in there with them. So they're buying a percent of a life insurance policy. Sometimes we have a policy there's only 2 or 3 people in, but most of ours have got 8 to 10 people in if it's like $1 million. Sometimes it's a $3 million policy and you've got maybe 30 people in it. So they're buying into that. They know that at the end of 24 months, 30 months, whatever it is, they're going to get paid. It may come in early. They still get the same amount. If it comes in on time, it's the same amount. If it's late, if it's within a year late, they still get the same amount of money. There's no premium. Now, if it's over a year late, they'll have to pay some premium. But they know that up front. They know how much it is up front. Every time we send out an invitation, we tell them everything about the history of that patient, how sick they are, when they got the cancer, everything. And then we say, this is what the premiums will be if it goes over. So we always tell them everything about the policy where there'll be no surprises.
And when you say that they may have to pay, if it goes more than a year over, that's when they would start to pay the premiums. But you say that because you escrow for that first year in case something like that happens, right?
That extra year, yes. We escrow for an extra year past the life expectancy. So unless it goes a year over, there's still not any premiums.
So how do you, when you're looking at buying policies or bidding on policies, how do you decide what is going to be a good policy? I know they're all stage four. You only deal with stage four, but it doesn't mean that anybody or any policy that says stage four at the top, it doesn't mean that you're necessarily bidding on it. You have found some stage four cancer policies that are not worth bidding on because you don't see profit margins. Why would you kick a policy like that out?
Well, lots of times when you read it, it says there's no sign of cancer. They've already did surgery. It's not showing up now. There's no progression. And lots of times progression just means it's there, but it hadn't moved any. And those are okay. But if it says there's no sign of cancer, we're not buying it. You know, they've got to have active cancer. They've got to be under treatment right now. They've either got to be on chemo. They've got to be on radiation. Immunology, therapy, something. And when we read it, it'll tell us when the cancer started, what all they've had, and they'll tell us if they were able to resect. Lots of times they'll say, especially on pancreatic cancer, they were unable to resect it. We just had a pancreatic cancer policy come due. Naturally, it was early again. And that told us the story. When they went in to resect it, they couldn't. And doctors told me several years ago on pancreatic cancer, if it's got that seam there in that one place, they cannot resect it at all. Mm. And that means they were going to die a lot quicker. We've done lots and lots of pancreatic cancer. They've all been successful. We do a lot of other cancers. Breast cancer is one that we've been very fortunate to have because all of them but three have come in early. We've had three that ran late, but the others have always come in early because, as I'm always telling you, women do strange things when it comes to breast cancer.
Oh, yeah.
They don't do the normal things. They don't say, okay, doctor, you know, we're going to do surgery, we're going to do chemo, we're going to do radiation. No. They're going to go to Mexico or Europe or somewhere. They're going to try everything in the world, holistic medicine, before they'll let anybody cut on them. And therefore, it's growing all that time.
And the research shows that any time that happens, if somebody does take like 6 months and goes over to like Holland and drinks the magic spring water, that all that's doing is really it's just giving 6 months of time for the cancer to grow. And then by the time they come back and they realize that the spring water magic thing didn't work, then all of a sudden, a lot of times it's too late to operate, things have progressed too far, and it becomes a much more difficult battle, right?
That's right. And we did a breast cancer one this last week. And one of my clients called me up and said, Faye, I'm concerned about this. And then I told them all the things about it. I said, you know, here's all the things about it. Not only has it spread, it's got a 6.1 mass in one place. It's got another mass of 1.7. And then it says it's a very aggressive cancer. When it says aggressive, that means it's growing pretty fast. If it's not aggressive, it wouldn't be as concerned. But it, not only was it aggressive, it was in two different places. And then you read a little farther, and the woman has been having this shoulder and back problem, and it wasn't doing any good going to the chiropractor. That tells me it has spread to the shoulder.
Oh,
and
no.
She just doesn't realize it and hadn't went back in, because I guarantee it's in the shoulder also when you're having that much pain and you've been going to a chiropractor. A chiropractor is not going to help this, folks.
Yeah.
And see, that's, again, doing alternate treatment thinking that you can solve it.
So when you say things like a 6.1 or a 7.1, does it, when you have new people come in and they say, hey, I really want to look into a life settlement, but I'm not a doctor, I don't speak doctor speak, if I read these reports, am I going to understand it? Is it in black and white? Is it normal, you know, people speak, or is it like, are there heavy doctor terms or things like that when they're reviewing them?
Well, there's some heavy doctor terms in there, but the rest of it you can read, I think. It tells you, you know, how many times the doctors have treated it, what cancer treatments it's on, if the cancer treatments are through, if they're still going through it. There's a lot of really good information there. And when it tells you if it's metastasized, if it's moved to more than one location, it's a lot better policy. If it's in one location, naturally, it's not going to be as good as one that is already in two or three locations.
Do people ever ask where these policies come from? Do they ever, you know, come in thinking that maybe you're like Johnny Appleseed marching around the country just taking and commandeering people's policies? Or do they understand that they have to sell them for a reason? And so in order for somebody to sell their policy, somebody like you has to be there to buy it. Do they understand the dynamic?
Well, we always tell them, you know, people come to us. We're not out here in the wilderness trying to find these policies, although I would be subject to it if I thought it would help somebody.
That's a whole nother show.
That's a whole nother deal. But anyway, when people come to us, they're desperate. They need to sell their policy. If they didn't have a really bad cancer, they would keep their policy. But they need the money now. Most of them need the money right now. Cancer treatment, as I'm always telling you, is $100,000 a month.
Wow.
And they want to be paid now. They don't want to be paid later. Most people, a lot of people, do not have group health insurance. So that takes care of a lot of things that would have protected them. So, you know, it's going to be a lot of money. We've even had doctors. We've bought a lot of doctors' policies, you know, that had cancer that needed the money. And then we have some people that, like, they've gotten a divorce. Well, when you get a divorce, if you've got a 401k or an IRA, they take half of that.
Wow.
So you don't have near as much money to go toward cancer treatment as you would have. And then a lot of people have just simply don't have the money for the cancer treatment. But they've got a life insurance policy, and they can sell it to us and get the cash they need right now.
It's a fast way to get a lump sum of money quickly.
It is a fast way. And all these ads on television that pretend like people are just going to sell their policy and go off into the sunset is usually not true.
You've seen those, haven't you?
I've seen them. They're not going off into the sunset. They're going to sell their policy because they need the money.
Yeah.
You know, they've got cancer. They need the money. So those things are not always accurate.
So
people will buy it, but those people aren't giving them but 20 or 30 cents on the dollar.
Oh, geez.
Because we look it up. People don't know that we can look up and see what they're paying.
Really?
And those people are paying them an average of 29 cents on the dollar.
Wow. I had no idea.
Which isn't anything. Yeah, and we're paying a lot more than that.
Wow. And so
yeah.
When people see those commercials where, you know, people are driving around in the RV and they're seeing the grandkids and they're touring and they're seeing Mount Rushmore and all the things that they do, those are not the types of policies that you're buying. And so just the fact that you're only buying stage four cancer, I would think that in the landscape of all of life settlements opportunities, just focusing on stage four cancer has to put you in a very unique niche, I would think, that is more profitable for people because of the, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm probably going to say this the wrong way, but one, because of the profit margins, and two, because of how quickly they generally mature. Am I saying that right?
Well, sort of. I think so. people do this because not only the profit is very good, like you say, but they can do it time and time again. They can buy policies and redo it again and again, and the result is the same. You know, we know these people are going to pass away. We're pretty sure of when. We know what the profit is. We know the life insurance company. We know they're big. We know they're A or AA rated. So, you know, everything is kind of on our side. The people that are selling the policy, they need to get their cash now and get out of this and go on with medical treatment.
Yeah.
And we need, you know, the investment for our people. And it's a good, solid investment. You know, it pays. It's paid over the years. Look how many years we've been doing it now. And it works.
I guess what I'm kind of what I'm trying to get at is that when people in the RV sell their policies, they're obviously healthy and in good shape, and those policies may not mature for 20, 30, 40 years, whereas a stage four cancer, we're talking about months, right?
They have to sit there and hold those. If you buy a policy on somebody that's healthy, they may live 20 years, like you say. But these are people that are impaired. They've got stage four cancer. It's already been diagnosed. And then if it's a $1 million policy, we try to get two separate life expectancies on it. Two different companies to tell us how sick they think. You know, we had one the other day that we bought, and first time in history that both of them gave it 18 months. We've never had them agree. But on this particular one, they both said 18 months.
Really?
Usually one will say 30-something months. One may say 18 or 14, but this one, they both agreed on the same thing. So that's a good thing if you can ever get two life expectancy companies to agree on a policy.
So wait, there's a lot of times there's that big of a difference between opinions? Between,
yes, there is.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Oh,
yes,
I didn't know
there
that.
Is.
What? So when you see that, what are you measuring? Like when you weigh one against the other, how do you decide that's a good policy?
Well, if I like the policy, I may say, okay, one says 18, one says 30. So I may go 20 or 25 and say we'll take 25 months, you know, right in the middle. We'll just go down the middle and take some from each company.
Wow. Okay, cool.
Yeah, and do it that way. Yeah, if we've got two opinions, unless I think it really is the first one. Like if one says we think it's 18 months, and if I really agree with them, I'll go with that one rather than a longer one.
Wow.
If I think the first one knew what they were talking about a little bit better, because we're going to read every bit of that thing several times, four or five times, to get what they're talking about, the size of the tumor, where all it is. And sometimes they've already operated on once, and then it comes back to that same site, not just moving around, but it comes back to there. Mm. And breast cancer is real bad about that. You can operate on it, then it's going to come back where you operated on it, which tells you it wasn't all gone the first time.
So something has been hiding underneath there the whole time, and it's been able to, I guess, I don't want to say grow, because that's not right, but...
No, it is growing. Yes, if it comes back, it was there, and they just didn't get it all the first time. The other thing to look for is if it's in the lymph nodes. Because your lymph nodes is how it travels in the blood. You know, it travels through the blood to different places. And we always look to see if it's metastasized, if it's in the hip, if it's in the ribs. We've had that one that had a melanoma, which you wouldn't think a melanoma in the knee was going to kill somebody. He did pass away. We bought it when it was in that first knee, and it just kept moving around, and he had more. And at any time, I think it came in early. I'm not sure. I believe it did.
Really?
Yeah.
That's not one of those that would strike me as saying, hey, we got to jump all over this. It seems like...
No, well, I didn't think so either. I bought it.
Wow.
I thought it's a pretty good one, but I thought it would go the whole distance, and it did not. I think that the melanoma, something happened when they operated on it, and it didn't work, and from there it just spread.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah. It was an interesting case. And you know, we keep a record of all these. We go back and see which ones went over, which ones are on time, which ones usually come in, you know, as they say it will.
Wow. So you're always going back and measuring the data to make sure that you're still...
that we're right.
Yeah.
That we're doing it the right way, that we're reading them right, and the companies we use. 21st is a great company. You know, some of these others I like. You know, Fasano is right on up there. Fasano usually doesn't miss anything over a couple months. They're that good. 21st has gotten better over the years. There was a time when it wasn't as good as it is now, but they're on it now, and theirs are coming in just pretty quick.
Wow.
As to what they say.
So when people come to see you for the first time, you have a new investor that really wants, they're really, really interested in it because it's such a conservative type of policy or investment opportunity. What's the biggest question that you hear from new people who want to get involved? What do they say? What do they ask?
Well, they want to know, you know, what the timelines are. You know, if it's 18 months, 24, you know, some of them want short term and some of them just want to get in a policy. You know, they're anxious. They want to get in a policy. You know, we give them the LEs. We show them how it's going to work. And then they make the decision. What a lot of people don't realize, they make the decision. We don't make it for them. Like I tell them, it's their money. It's not like when you're in the stock business. You know, they make all the decisions for you. We don't. We give you that opportunity all the time to call the shots.
Cool. So it really literally is your money, not your money, their money.
It really is your money. It's not our money. And we don't act like it's our money.
Which is a nice change, I would assume, because people, you know, after is probably spending so many years in the stock market, realizing that they can do anything they want to, is kind of nice, I would think, to have a little bit of control and understand every single investment before you get in, sign off yes or no, and then just kind of like set it, forget it, and wait for the policy to mature. I would guess that's a nice place for people to be.
It is. And the other nice thing is everything is handled at the bank. It's not handled that way at the stock market. With us, everything goes to Nevada Trust. They handle the money from day one.
Okay.
Your money is always escrowed there. Your account is in there where it ought to be. The account is not where we can take your money and make any decision at all. We put it at the bank. You make the call. Then the bank does it every time. They pay the premiums, make sure the premiums are paid. And then when the people... pass away, the bank gets a certified death certificate, and they send it to the carrier. And that reminds me, we had several that did get to the bank this week. Campanella got to the bank, and Socola. Socola was a $1 million policy. The other one, I think, was $500,000. But we had, remember, we had several we've been waiting on, and two of them I know did get to the bank this week. I think we'll have the Smith policy. I think the next 10 days it'll be at the bank.
So people made some big money this week.
They got paid this week, I can tell you that.
Nice.
And a lot of them have already reinvested their money. They knew it was coming, and they'd already reserved in other policies.
Really? That's fast.
Yes. They had reserved, and so they were ready to go in this other policy that I already had for them.
Wow.
Yes, and so that was a good thing.
All right, and that's kind of how it works. We'll get into a little bit more about the big picture. We'll get into some of the risks and things like that in just a few minutes. But for right now, this is Your Money with Faye Bagby, and your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
And every Saturday morning around this time, we get into trivia. So what is our topic this morning?
Well, I thought about all the mansions in Texas. You know, we've talked about some of them. The one down at Orange that's so famous that has everything in the world that everybody ought to visit. But how many people have visited all of our historic mansions that were, you know, from the 1700s and the 1800s?
That far back.
That far back. We have beautiful mansions. The one I'm going to talk about this morning is the Fulton Mansion down at Fulton, Texas. It's on the National Register of Historic Places. It's on the Texas Historic Site. It is on the Texas State Antiquities Landmark. And it is recorded as a Texas Historic Landmark.
Really?
Now, then, the state of Texas owns this one, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
the Fultons came to this county in 1874. And their name was Colonel George Ware Fulton, his wife, Harriet Gillette Smith, and they began building a four-story structure, and it overlooks Aransas Bay. Now, this was called Oakhurst, and it's most up-to-date for 1874. It had indoor plumbing.
Really?
They had reaching sinks, and every bedroom had gas lighting. They had central heating.
Pure luxury.
Very luxury. And they had two built-in copper tubs.
Wow, cool.
Yeah, now they owned the mansion 1907, 1943. Then the Mays bought the house. They planted palms out front and turned the grounds into an RV park.
What?
Terrible thing. I just can't imagine all this happening.
Wow.
Anyway, they sold the dilapidated house in 1976. Well, it was added to the National Registry in 1975. The state of Texas purchased it and 2.3 acres and opened it to the public in 1983.
Really?
And then in 2008, it was transferred to Texas from the Texas Parks and Wildlife to the Texas Historical Commission, and they redid it again, and it has been redone, and it's the most beautiful thing you ever saw. Four stories, beautiful mansion. People should go and see this thing. The Fulton Mansion is one of the prettiest ones around. It's a fabulous-looking mansion, and it tells how many thousand people go through it every year.
I bet that's fascinating to see in person.
It is. It is one of the most gorgeous mansions. I can't even believe that people were smart enough in 1800s to do all this.
I know. You know how I love architecture. I bet that's just a sight to be seen.
Can you imagine an empire-type house in the 1800s? I mean...
I can't believe that they turned it into an RV park out front. I'm just.
Oh, yeah. Can you imagine turning that? Oh, it's horrible thinking they did that. I mean, I was just in shock.
I assume that's not there anymore, right?
No, I guarantee you. They brought it back to its original splendor and grandeur. I can't believe it. Then the state, thank gosh, bought it, put it on the National Registry. And the state restored it and opened it to the public in 1963.
Wow.
And then it went on the Texas Historical Commission. And now then the State Historical Commission does operate it. And so it's had two renovations since the state of Texas took it over. And it's a fabulous house. And we should all go and look at these things. It's a part of Texas. If we don't, one of these days, all these old things will be gone, and we'll say, how did all this start in Texas? And us and our grandchildren won't even know.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, unless we go and visit them. The other one that's so fabulous that I'll talk about at a different time is the Spanish Governor's Palace in San Antonio.
Ooh.
I wonder how many people remember that we had a Spanish Governor's Palace in the state of Texas, way, way back.
Wow, cool.
And it's a one-story mansion.
Really?
It's right downtown, close to the Alamo. And this is something else that everybody should go and see, the Spanish Governor's Palace in San Antonio, Texas. We have so many structures, beautiful places that have been restored to the grandeur that's a part of Texas. And I wonder how many people in Texas have actually seen all these historical sites that we have that are wonderful. Nobody else has got all this except Texas.
That's true. And the thing is that, you know, there's so many of them. It's like, I don't even, you'd almost have to take like the second half of your life off just to travel and see everything. There's so many things. I don't think it's even possible to fit it all in a normal lifetime. There's so many things.
That's right. But you could take different weekends and say, okay, this week I'll go see all the mansions, especially the one at Orange. I mean, that's a two-day deal. It's so fabulous. And remember, the one at Orange has got all their dishes, their furniture. I mean, and then it's got the bayou there, and they've got all the birds. They've got all the sanctuary. So each one of these is unique, and should be visited by the people of Texas.
Yeah. And it's one thing to, you know, read about these things in school books or, you know, read about them online and see pictures. It's another thing when you actually go there and you're standing in, you know, like a foyer of a big mansion where, you know that people were, you know, hundreds of years ago. And it's almost like you get the actual vibe of the place. It adds a dimension of awe that you can't get from, you know, just reading about it or seeing it in school or anything like that. You have to experience it.
That's exactly right. And I went and read reviews of this, and people were saying the most wonderful things about this mansion, how fabulous it was, and how glad they were that they had went and seen it.
And it's four stories, so you said,
tells
right?
It is four stories tall.
All right. Well, there may be a Texas mansion tour coming up in at least our future, hopefully other people's as well.
Well, and the other thing, you know, the painted churches, you know, people ought to take that trip. There's so many different things that you could take every weekend forever and not see everything.
See, now this is what I'm talking about. See, you feature so many of these different things. It's just like, you know, between, you know, the painted churches, between the mansions, and this is just the tip of the iceberg, you know, because I'm sure there's many, many more besides just the Fulton Mansion. But, you know, you've got, you know, the wine tours. You've got all these other things that are all over the place, literally in one state. It almost becomes overwhelming. You really need to put together like some kind of a tourism book or something so that people can plan out these different tours.
and be ready. I mean, you can have so much fun, you know, just going to see all this and to be able to tell, you know, I have been there, I've seen it. I know what the architecture of Texas was way back and how far advanced some of these people were. Hmm. Can you imagine central heating and air? How did they do it?
I know it.
I mean, the rest of us, it took us a long time to get central heating and air.
Yeah, yeah. And Fulton Mansion had indoor plumbing, copper tubs. I mean, we look at it now and say, yeah, big deal, so what? You know, but man, you know, to actually step inside a building like that, that was experiencing so many things so far ahead of its time. It's just you gain a new appreciation for stuff like that when you're actually there.
Yeah, and whoever was smart enough to not only designed it but to build it back in the 1800s, that they were that smart.
Yeah, yeah. Man.
I mean, I can't even imagine a four-story house. In the 1800s.
I know it. It's just like, how did they even, it's not like they had like cranes. You know?
That's right. I mean, you know, and these people were in the cattle business, hide business, you know, and so for their time, they were very wealthy.
Mm.
And all these people made good in Texas. I'm always so proud that people in Texas in the early days, you know, became millionaires.
Yeah, yeah. You find so many groundbreaking people in so many different industries all within one state. It's fascinating, really, how many different areas inventors have penetrated just from this one state alone.
Yeah, and they were all guys with big ideas.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Far ahead of themselves. I mean, their house was way ahead of itself. And I imagine their business was too.
Yeah, more things to be proud of to be from here.
Be from Texas.
You don't find these kinds of things. You don't find this many different big things that have changed so many different industries and different people's lives in one area anywhere other than Texas.
That's right. There's no place like Texas, I can tell you.
That is for sure. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is.
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330.
So when we're talking about the investment with life settlements, people should not plan, because I know you mentioned earlier that this past week, one of the $1 million policies came in. People should not expect to come in, invest in one life insurance policy, and they're set for life. That's not how it works. The program is set up to do this over a number of years and be in a number of different policies. What is an average, maybe, or what do you recommend for most people to be in as far as diversity, how many policies,
they
how long?
They need to be diversified. It only works if you're diversified. If you're diversified, it'll always work out. And a person needs 5 or 6 policies minimum. As you know, I talk about it all the time. I have people that have 20 policies and more, and they have made a fantastic amount of money over the years. And in fact, I said this a couple of weeks ago, my largest investor is wanting to have 30. By the way, he does have the virus.
Really?
The other day he wanted to put more money in some policies, and we were trying to figure out how to get his money to us because he couldn't go to the bank to transfer the money. So, you know, you should always keep, and usually he does keep extra money on hand with us. This happened to be one of those times we'd used all that money, and he needed to replenish, and he was trying to replenish, and the bank said, no, you have to come in to sign the transfer. He couldn't do it.
Oh, man.
Because he does have the virus. So I want to tell everybody, always leave some extra money in your account if we need to move on a policy rather fast, because if something should happen to you, like you're laid up and can't come in or can't go to the bank, sometimes they will not transfer the money without you signing a card.
So when people first start out, what's a good average place for not only, because I'm sure there's two ways to look at it. One, how do most people start? And then two, how do you recommend they start? Like how much should they bring in? How many policies at the beginning?
Well, the minimum is 100,000, but most people are going to come in with 150, 250 to start because they want several policies. And, you know, if you start off with at least 3 policies, you're in pretty good shape. And that's like with $50,000 apiece. Now, you know, we had the policy the other day that the premiums were higher. They may never be called upon to pay the premium, but a lot of people were a little worried about it. So we said, okay, nobody can put but $60,000 in. We had several people wanting to put $100,000, and we backed them off and said, you probably should just put $50,000 to $60,000. We'll be more comfortable with it because if it does go over, the premiums are a little high. So that's the way we handled it.
So as you're looking at each individual investor, when they come in, or say that they've been here for a long time, you're looking at profit margins. You're looking at, you know, how much the actual policy is. You're looking at, okay, what is the best point to come in as far as dollar-wise to invest? Here's how much the policy will pay. If it goes over, here's what you may have to pay in premiums. All this is mapped out for the greatest, to maximize profit margins for every single individual investor and policy, right?
Yes. We want them to make the most they can make on every investment they've got. You know, I want them to have some policies that are 18 months, 24 months, a 30-month one. They need to have all different types. Now, I've got some people say, I only do 18 months or less.
Is that a good thing?
No. With me, I want it to be rounded out. I just want it to be rounded out according to what's wrong with them. That's what I'm looking at. What is wrong with them? I do it by what is wrong with the people rather than how many months it is. But I have other people that don't. And everybody has their own way of thinking about this, you know, as to how to do it.
So wait a minute. You're I guess in the order of prioritization, you're prioritizing the type of cancer, not type because they're all stage 4. But how do I say this the right way? It's
okay,
not about
I
the time.
I look at it this way. I look at somebody with a breast cancer one, let's say, and it says it's 30 months. Okay, if I like it. It doesn't matter to me if it's 30 months or if it's 18 months. What it says about it is what's important. If it says, when I read it, if I say, no, it's not going that long, then I think that's a great policy. And I would take it and say, okay, move on to the next one, maybe 20 months.
Mm.
But I look at what they've got, what kind of cancer it is, and what I think it'll come in at. That's what you need to be looking at. How soon do I think it'll come in?
Okay, because it may say 36 months, but you're looking at the actual policy itself, and you're thinking it may actually come in and say 20, just for example.
Yeah, and lots of times I'll buy it based on that. I'll say, no, this person is not even going to live very long. They're so sick. Then some of them I say, this person's not near sick. They're going to go the distance. Hmm. You know, whatever it is, they'll probably still be there.
Okay. All right. Well, that certainly makes a whole lot of sense. It's a totally different perspective than I was looking at it. But it makes a lot of sense when you put it that way. So,
and of course, you know, people have made a lot of money just being consistent. That's how you do it. You know, when a policy comes in, you reinvest every time. You reinvest and get that interest built up. That's how you build your interest, is by reinvesting. So if you set them in cash, you know, it's not building up.
It seems like it's one of these types of investments that really just kind of builds on itself. You get started, you get into a number of policies, one matures while another one is coming in, and then when that one comes in, you reinvest it. So it's almost like a giant leapfrog effect, which ends up creating almost like a snowball effect. And before time, people, I guess their profit margins go up and up and up. And as they do that, they get in more and more policies, which means profits go up and up and up. Is this kind of like this general scenario?
That's the way I look at it, yes. You want to keep that profit building all the time, where if you need some cash, you can cash out some of it. Or you can start taking monthly or annual income. We have a lot of people who are taking annual income out.
Really?
You know, because we've had a lot of people retired this year. A lot of people are going to, next year will start taking money out. So we have to have enough cash in there that they can start taking money out next year.
So they can actually, once they're retired, they can still invest, still grow their money without the uncertainty and the idea that, hey, the bottom could fall out in the stock market at any time. If that happens, we're in life settlements. It's not going to affect it in any way. And they still grow their money without having to worry, you know, about really losing everything, right?
That's right. And I think it's one of the safest investments right now anybody can be in. I think that's why we're getting so many new customers, because everybody wants it to be really safe. And I think it's a time when everybody needs to be safe and know that, you know, that you can always get your money and get paid.
You know, and I know that we've talked about, you know, policies going over a lot, because there are risks really with everything. And that is actually, I guess, the biggest risk when it comes to a life settlement, because people, I say, well, this is really, really great. I get the, you know, how conservative it is. I get how well informed it is. I get how we kind of know basically when we're going to get paid, how much we're going to get paid. We get how, you know, investing in over and over and over and over, we make more money and money, money. But it does come with a risk, and there's three big ones, and that's the biggest one, is if it does go over, right?
If it does go over, your biggest risk to this whole investment is it going over. You have to be prepared for some of them to go over. It's going to happen in spite of everything. So, you know, some will go over, some of them will be on time, and some of them will be early. So you have to figure that out. If you've got six policies, two of them may go over. Two of them may be on time and two may be early. So that's your biggest risk. It's you'll still get paid. You'll still get your money. You always get your principal and your interest. They never hold up your interest or your principal. When the person passes away, you get paid. That's when you get paid. Somebody asked me that the other day, well, when do we get our interest? When it matures and the person passes away, you get all your principal, all your interest at that time.
It's a pretty quick process, too. It's not like people are waiting for, you know, 6 months to get paid. It's relatively fast, right?
Yes, it's usually really fast. It's slowed down because of the virus. It's taken us longer to get the certified death certificates. If it's from New Jersey, it's going to take longer, let me tell you. People in New Jersey just don't care, let me tell you.
Call them out.
our lawyers was going to send a courier for us and just send it over there. Do you know what they said?
What?
No, we're not going to accept the courier. If it's not a member of the family, we're not going to give you the death certificate.
What?
Oh, yeah. I mean, oh, my gosh. People in New Jersey are just a little different.
Again, it's just not the being really, really nice about that.
Oh, my gosh.
A little bit
different. These things happen.
What's the second risk?
The second risk is it's until maturity, it's not liquid. Always remember that. I think everybody knows that. But it is not a liquid investment until it matures and you get paid. And that's when it becomes liquid again. Then if a life insurance company ever went under, we've never had one go under in Texas. We haven't had one go under for years nationwide because somebody always buys them. In fact, we haven't even had one that anybody could even buy. I think it was 3 years ago or four, and someone bought it instantly because life insurance companies have the biggest premium income in the world. Their income is tremendous. So that's not a big risk. Your biggest risk is always going to be it going over.
Which doesn't seem like it's really that big of a deal because, one, the first year is already, you know, taken care of. You already accrue for that, so that's a done deal. But then the other thing that people should know is that you have to be accredited anyway. So in order to even be in this, it seems like the risks would not really affect an accredited investor anyway.
Because an accredited investor, they either have to make $200,000 a year or they have to be worth $1 million, and that is without their home. And then the minimum investment is $100,000.
All right. So then somebody's probably thinking to themselves, man, I really want to do life settlements. I'm not quite there to the point where I am accredited. I can't quite do this yet. What's the best way to build up to it? Are there other options where people...
It's to do annuities and to do, you know, a fixed annuity. Or an index annuity, not a stock market annuity, because that's just like being in the stock market. If it's a variable annuity, you can still lose your money because it goes up and down. These do not go up and down. Once you make your interest, it's locked in. The interest is locked in every year, and it cannot go anywhere. So an annuity is a very responsible way to invest. It'll always be safe. You know, years ago, it was your alternative was just annuities. So we have lots and lots of clients that have annuities. They've had them for 15, 18 years. They've made good interest. They still own them. We've had several people pass away lately, and their estate, you know, is going to change the annuity over to them. So it's a good, safe investment for anybody. Doesn't matter who you are.
So one last thing before I let you go. Do people ever worry about policy availability? What should they expect when they come in? Should they always expect that, you know, there's always policies coming in, or is there like a period?
Well,
where...
we've done four, you know, in the last 30 days.
Oh, wow.
A lot of money. I think we've done 5 million in policies.
$5 million.
Yeah, I think we've done 5 million.
Oh.
And we're finishing those up, and hopefully there'll be some others available, you know, within the next couple of weeks.
Okay.
I think we've got another $1 million policy coming to put out to the public, I think, in a week.
Really? So this would be a good time for new investors if they wanted to come in, get accounts set up, maybe even just get some more information and then get accounts set up. This is a good time to do it because there's a lot of opportunity on the horizon.
There's a lot of opportunity that'll be very quick. Get them in some policies, get them started, and get them to, you know, making some interest on their money.
Cool. Well, what's the best way to do this?
They need to call or email us. They can email me. You know, they can call the office, you know, at the 800 number. They can come by the office in Midland. Any of the three will work.
And you're still doing Zoom calls or regular phone calls.
Yes,
but people do need an appointment.
They need an appointment. Usually, I talk to them on the phone. We're setting up accounts now, just talking to them over the phone. Then they're coming in to see Claudia, and Claudia is getting them set up with Nevada Trust.
Cool. So they sign all their paperwork there, easy breezy. It's a simple process. They do need to get started. So one last time, Faye, what is your phone number for people to call?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And the other deal is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
Website. We always forget the website.
The website. Man, I couldn't even think of it there. Oh, my Lord.
It's almost like we're hashtagging all of a sudden.
That's right. So anyway, they can go to the website and find out a lot of information. It's good for them to go to the website.
You've been listening to Your Money with Faye Bagby, sound advice to help your money grow. Listen for Your Money with Faye Bagby every Saturday morning at 10 here on 97 Gold.
This program has been a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and has been brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.